Welcome to The Detail. I am your host, Kathy Antunes, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Well, August 23rd is election day for the Sarasota County School Board, and we have invited all the school board candidates to come for a half hour of time to discuss why they're running and what they're about. So with me today is Lauren Kurnov. Lauren, you are running to fill an empty seat. So there's no incumbent, but why don't we start? You're a native Sarasotan, aren't you? You grew
That's
up.
That's right.
Yeah. So tell us a bit about your background and why you're running.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me, Kathy.
Absolutely.
So I did grow up here in Sarasota and I went through our public school system. I have two kids that attend public school here in Sarasota County now as well. And I also have a background working in education. I've worked locally at New College of Florida and at the University of South Florida on the Sarasota Manatee campus. And last year I completed my doctorate in education. So, in terms of why I'm running, I'm really excited to have this opportunity with an open seat, as you mentioned, to really be able to bring my voice and my perspective as both a parent and an educator to the school board. I think it's incredibly important that we focus the conversation at school board meetings around key educational issues that are affecting the students in our area. And I'm really looking forward to talking with you about what I see as those key issues and what we can do as a community to support our students.
Okay, great. I'm curious, what was your field of expertise with your PhD? What was your dissertation about?
Sure. So, for my dissertation, I really looked at positive youth development and identity development. So looking at how adolescents sort of develop a sense of purpose, what sort of supports they can get from their community, from mentors, and how they kind of develop a sense of identity, both within the classroom and within the community.
Yeah, that's great. It's such a critical time as people, we get our young adults launching out into the world that they have that sense. So tell me, Lauren, if you were to look back and say, I'm so proud I accomplished these three things, from a priority perspective as a school board member, what are three things that you think are really critical and your priorities should you be elected?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, my first priority is really sort of in this broad area of career readiness and career development. Most of my career has focused on connecting students to jobs, to internship experiences, to mentors. And so I'm really eager to bring that career readiness focus to our school district so that we make sure every student, when they graduate, has a plan, whether it's, enrolling in college or technical school or finding employment. I think we need to start much earlier on having those conversations with our students and continue to have them in a really ongoing and intentional way throughout their K-12 experience. It can start even as early as elementary school, bringing parents and business owners in to talk with students about their careers, sort of get students thinking about all the different possibilities that are out there in our community and beyond. Middle school, as the students progress to middle school, there's advising, all sorts of software and advising that students can experience to help them take stock of what are my natural interests? What am I curious about? And what careers do those translate into? What skills do I need to be developing to really get ready for what I tend to have a natural affinity towards? So that kind of self-assessment and reflection, doing more of that at the middle school level, and then come high school, really amping up those experiential learning opportunities, more opportunities for students to have job shadowing experiences, one day sort of career-oriented field trips at different businesses in our community, longer-term internship opportunities, semester-long or summer-long internship experiences for our students. Mentorship programs. We have such incredible talent in our community, retired CEOs of Fortune 500 companies, parents, you know, mm-hmm. parents with a wide range of skills and backgrounds, such talent and incredible resources in our community. And we could do so much more to leverage that talent to really do a lot more capacity building that would benefit our students. So I'm really eager to enhance our mentorship programs.
Mm-hmm.
in our classrooms and also in our after school programs. So that's, I guess, sort of priority number one for me, so making sure that every single student yeah. has a plan. I guess, you know, looking at it after serving on the board, what would I see as a tremendous accomplishment? And it would really, you know, the outcome around this sort of broad goal would be ensuring that every single student graduates with a plan, that every mm-hmm. student, when they cross that stage on graduation day, they know they're either starting a job a month or so later, going to be enrolling in college or technical school, but they have a plan and they know where they're, you know, where they're headed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that makes total sense. So one thing you're really focused on, and it dovetails with what you've described in your PhD, is this development toward a career path. What am I going to do in the world?
Absolutely.
How about, you know, any other
Absolutely. Yes, So that was, yeah. that was just one. And just one more note to sort of say about that, you know, having that career focus, obviously it will not only benefit our students, but it, you know, it's also going to benefit our business community. We hear all the time from employers about the brain drain here in Sarasota and how difficult mm-hmm. it is to find talent and to recruit locally. So we need to be paying attention to that and really asking our employers, what are the jobs, what are the skills that they need to make their businesses continue to grow and thrive. So I think there just needs to be greater synergy. We need to be asking those questions of our businesses and then taking those responses into account when we look at what we're offering to our students. So that's sort of, my focus on career development and career readiness. The second big issue that I think is incredibly important is making sure that our students are reading on grade level. So mm-hmm. you sort of started with that.
Yeah. Well, I had, you know, Sarasota County Schools have kept their A rating.
Yes.
And I'd mentioned you briefly before we started that, but we have seen a decline in reading scores, and yes. certainly COVID has been a factor.
Right.
And we all know that kids have to be reading, but beyond, you know, third, fourth grade, if they're not at a certain reading level, then everything else becomes very difficult.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So how would you approach the deficit, the reading deficit, and you know, bring kids up to speed?
Yep. I think, you know, in a number of ways. I mean, I'll start off by saying that our scores have, declined. We were already in a troubling situation before the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
We had 30% of our students reading below grade level pre-pandemic. And now we're in a situation with the recent scores having just come out for our third graders who tested this spring. We see that 37% of our third graders are reading below grade level. So this is unacceptable.
Yeah.
And something we really definitely need to address. So, you know, a couple of things. One, I think it's incredibly important that we expand access to early childhood education programs.
Mm-hmm.
We yeah. have right now, I believe, 32 pre-K classrooms in our school district. And I believe our superintendent has looked to add or approve an additional 10 pre-K classrooms in our school district for the coming year. So I think that's, you know, going to be a really important step in the right direction and something that we'll need to, you know, continue to monitor outcomes and invest in the years to come. Because what you have happening now is students are starting kindergarten at 5 years old. At such varying levels of readiness. You have mm-hmm. some students who are already beginning readers who have had parents who have been able to read to them from the time they came out of the womb.
Yeah.
And then you have other kids who haven't had access to many books and who don't know their letters yet. And so I think it's really, you know, our students are already starting off at such a deficit and in such mm-hmm. different places at 5 years old. That then it's challenging for our teachers, especially given classroom sizes. It's really difficult for our teachers to be able to differentiate the instruction to reach every single student at their level and get those that need the extra support reading on grade level. So we need to do a lot more to expand access to our early childhood education programs. That's one intervention that we know will really go a long way to address grade level reading. Start earlier.
Yeah.
So I think that's incredibly important. Another thing that we could do is, you know, I was talking about mentors having a role in, you know, career development and mentoring our students, let's say in middle and high school around career exploration. But we also have folks from the community and parents who could come in and serve as volunteer reading coaches in our classrooms and in our after school programs. And there are a number of programs that are already in place that do that sort of work. But I think that, you know, we could also do more to recruit more volunteers from the community to come in and support our struggling readers. But, you know, we also need to kind of get serious about shrinking class sizes. I think, you know, the sort of dovetails, I guess, with my third key issue, which I'll talk about in a minute, which is really around addressing our teacher shortage. But, you know, we need to make sure that we're offering our teachers a fair and competitive salary. We need to address the teacher vacancies that we have. And one way to do that is by making the profession more attractive. You attract talent when you're able to offer a competitive wage and also a more ideal work environment. And so if teachers have more manageable classroom sizes and student to teacher class ratios, then, you know, they're going to have a more positive experience, but most importantly, your students are, they're going to thrive and they're going to have an easier time learning how to read. So that really addresses two issues. That'll help us with the teacher shortage and our recruitment challenges, but then it also will help at the instructional level with our students who do need so much more time and individual attention.
You know, when it comes to improving the environment for teachers, because obviously, you know, there's been we've never seen school boards focused on at a national level, you know, in terms of politics, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's some forces out there that are making school board issues and school board races kind of elevating them in terms of controversy, right? And I think for teachers, this is with COVID, certainly it was a very trying time, but there's been a backlash this has been going on for a long time. I did an interview with another, he was the head of Pastors for Public Education in Texas. He started this organization and his name is Charles Johnson, Reverend Charles Johnson. And we were talking about just the level of respect that teachers used to have, you know, and there's a very ugly phrase that's crept into the lexicon. It's kind of this smug, sarcastic, you know, those who can do and those who don't teach.
Right.
You know, and yet without teachers, we are, as a society, you know, we would be in deep trouble. Everything about the future depends on education. What would you do or, you know, what do you think the school board might be able to do to just elevate the level of respect and kind of shift this culture of antagonism that we're seeing toward the teaching profession?
So, you know, compensation is one approach, but certainly it's not the end all be all to sort of addressing this broader kind of cultural issue. But yeah, we need to be treating our professionals, our teachers as the professionals that they are. And, you know, of course, it's important that parents are involved. We know that we're going to see the best possible outcomes for our students when parents and teachers are working together to support students. But, you know, we need to make sure that we are compensating our teachers appropriately. I mean, here in Sarasota, the cost of living has become so astronomical that you know, we're not in a moment right now, given the teacher shortages and our you know, continually elevating cost of living here where we can afford to skimp on teacher salaries. So, you know, most of the teachers I talk to are dealing with hour-long commutes to and from, you know, home to school, you know, on top of then caring for their own families when they get home and then grading papers. So I do think the compensation issue is key. I think reducing classroom sizes to make the process of teaching and of educating, just much more manageable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, let's make sure that we're, you know, treating our teachers with the respect that they deserve. And I think some of that, you know, comes so much of what we can do as leaders on the school board is sort of model civility, you know, and practices mm-hmm. where we're treating each other with kindness and respect, even if we don't always agree with each other. It's okay to disagree and have, you know, substantive differences on important issues. That's fine. But we need to get back to a place where we're treating treating each other with kindness and respect. And that goes to, you know, all constituents and all stakeholders, parents, teachers, community members, everyone. Yeah.
So, you know, again, with regard to the culture of education and particularly in the state of Florida, we've heard for a while now that, you know, there's a concern out there in the political realm that about parental rights mm-hmm. and that parents' rights have not been respected. Clearly, as you said, parents are important. Can you comment on this trend and how you see your role if you were to be elected to the school board?
Sure.
Kind of bridging this divide where some people really feel that they're not being heard.
Yep, absolutely. Parents absolutely need a seat at the table. And I'll talk to you about sort of what I think of as really helpful and productive ways that we can encourage more parental involvement. But just one other thing I wanted to add in terms of improving the climate for teachers. I've talked to our human resources department, talked to the school district. We need to be capturing information, you know, through our exit interviews. So teachers, when they do leave, we need to be doing a better job of understanding why they're leaving. And asking those teachers that have chosen to leave, are they moving to other school districts? Are they still teaching, but teaching elsewhere? Are they leaving the profession entirely? We need to understand from those teachers that are departing what the reasons are, but then we also need to be proactive about having those same conversations with our teachers that are choosing to return, both our new teachers that we're recruiting and then our longstanding teachers. We need to be having more ongoing conversations, focus groups, discussions with our teachers about what their experiences are and what they need, you know, to do their jobs even better than they already are. So I think that's a really important piece. And I just wanted to add that.
Sure. Just reminding you that.
So, I mean, I can tell you I am, the only candidate or sitting school board member here in Sarasota with children in our public school system. So as a parent, I care a great deal about my children's education and the education of their peers and all the students in this community that I also attended and graduated from mm-hmm. as a public school student. So parents have an incredibly important role. I think we need to be, parents absolutely need a seat at the table. We need to make sure they, you know, have time and space to talk about the issues that are important to them at school board meetings. We also need to encourage them to have those conversations with teachers at their children's school, with the administrators, assistant principals, principals. So make sure that those conversations are happening not only at the district level, but also locally, right, within their children's schools. But, you know, there are other ways that parents could be involved. As I mentioned earlier, parents should be involved as reading coaches in their children's schools. And teachers in some instances could do more to communicate with parents in an ongoing way, keep them updated through weekly newsletters, You know, that's all additional work that our teachers do, but it's important to keep that line of communication open between what's going on in the classroom and, you know, so that parents can kind of reinforce those educational concepts at home. You know, and there are other sort of pragmatic things that I think our schools and our PTO organizations in particular could do more to be a little more inclusive. You know, every public school that I have, that my children have attended here in Sarasota County, the PTO meetings have always been held, you know, at 9:15 in the morning, right after class drop off. And that time is not conducive to working parents. No. So I think about things like that. And if I were a parent, you know, that that wanted to get involved in my child's school, and I worked a traditional 9-to-5 job and I could never participate in PTO meetings, I'd be upset too.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, we need to be having conversations with our PTOs and our school administration about, you know, making those sorts of forums more accessible so that more parents can participate at the school level. Maybe 1 month they're held at that traditional kind of 9 a.m. time for our stay-at-home parents. And then the next month there's an evening option, maybe a virtual option. I mean, there's so many kind of creative ways of meeting and convening that we did learn through the pandemic. And so let's apply some of that to these forums so that they can be more, more inclusive spaces for our parents as well.
We've seen in the state of Florida, that, you know, there's a charter school model. There's a new Department of Education, secretary, Manny Diaz, who works for Academica. And before this year, charter schools had to be approved mm-hmm. by the local school board, right? And now there's with the DeSantis administration, and if he is reelected, the state will be able to, a charter school will have the option of either applying to the local school board for approval, or they can go to the state to a committee, a panel there who can choose to approve, which I think sets up a pretty interesting conundrum, because you're basically having the state level obligate local dollars outside of the local board responsible for those dollars. And, you know, we've been really careful in Sarasota County about the corporate charter model, charter schools in general, but the corporate charter model is subject to financial abuse, and, you know, bundle leases that are gouging the school board budget. That is a common criticism of corporate charters, that they'll set up a separate company that handles the real estate and charge the school budget up to 40%, where that's just 13% is more like it for your building expense. Mm-hmm. So, and that takes money away from education. I'm curious about your comment, and, you know, whether you want to comment on this push for corporate charters, this new dynamic in Tallahassee, local, you know, local home rule. What's your feeling about all of that?
I think, you know, absolutely these decisions should be made at the local level. I think that, you know, charter schools, when they offer something that's differentiated from what our traditional public schools offer, and when they can truly be an enhancement for our students and our community, then I think they are absolutely something that should be looked at and considered. So I think about, you know, examples like Dreamers Academy, you know, Sarasota Military Academy, Sarasota School of Arts and Sciences. You know, we have some charter schools here that are, you know, that are different and that offer opportunities that aren't offered in our traditional public schools. And I think that's always...
They tend to be actually homegrown. They're not part of a chain.
Yeah. Right. And I think, you know, that's because we are, you know, the people living here, we know what our community offers. We know what our business is, you know, as I kind of started off talking about what our businesses are really looking for, what are the, you know, skill-based shortfalls that our students are, you know, graduating from our schools and not able to fill certain community needs. You know, that's one vantage point that we could consider looking at. But really, you know, what are kind of the range of programs that we're offering for our students through our traditional public schools? And, you know, when a new application comes forth, I really believe that the decision-making power should rest with local authority to, who folks here on the ground who will understand, is this really going to be an enhancement for our students? Or is it going to be something that is going to, you know, pull funds away from our student community?
Okay. Well, we have a few minutes left. And before I ask you the last question, I want to remind everyone that election day for the school board is August 23rd. And the deadline for registering to vote has passed. So, you know, hopefully you're registered to vote. You can request a mail-in ballot. I think you have till August 13th to do that. And early voting starts August 13th. So be aware, everybody can vote on August 23rd in that election. It is a primary election as well for other offices, but for our local school board, August 23rd is election day. So Lauren, final question. Why should people vote for you?
People should vote for me because I am the candidate that will always focus the conversation on educational outcomes and on, you know, what our students and what our community needs. I'm, you know, from this area. I have skin in the game as a parent with kids attending our public schools right now. And, you know, and I have a background in education. So I have the expertise, I have the background, but I have a real vested interest as a parent. And I will just always have a dogged persistence on making sure that we focus the conversation on career outcomes, making sure our students are graduating with a plan, making sure they start, you know, right immediately in kindergarten with the skills that they need to be able to develop as early readers. So, you know, I will be that person that will always focus the conversation on real educational issues that affect our students and that will affect our community ultimately.
Okay. And how do people find out more about your campaign?
Well, anyone can go visit my website, which is just my first and last name.com. So laurenkernov.com. That's LaurenKurnov.com.
Okay. Well, Lauren, thank you so much for stepping up and running. I always thank everyone running for public office. We need good people running. We need to run races and campaigns that respect people and give everyone, you know, the opportunity to learn what you stand for. We strive to do that here at WSLR. So I thank my guest, Lauren Kernov, and everyone. You've been listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Lauren, thanks again.
Thanks everybody. So much, Kathy.
Yes, and make it a great day.